Hello, and welcome to Episode 3 of the Mock Virgil Gamecast. We are continuing our discussion of StarCraft, this time moving on to those crafty and ever-so-nasty Zerg. Now, I've listened to the last couple of episodes myself, and as a effort to improve the quality of the podcast, I've taken some efforts to try and keep my thoughts organized. I hope to be more concise, a little bit less rambly than I have been the last couple of times, and hopefully that will help things out. So, as I mentioned, today we will be talking about the Zerg, and of the three races in StarCraft, the Zerg are in some ways the most unique. That's not to say that there aren't very strict differences between the Terrans and the Protoss, but it's a little bit easier to walk into the Protoss after teaching yourself how to play Terrans than it is to walk into the Zerg after teaching yourself to play one of the other two. The reason for this comes from some very systematic differences in how the Zerg function from a building block manner, the most important of which is what is some people refer to as linear construction. This is in reference to how the Zerg build units. See, with the Terrans and the Protoss, as you tech up the tech tree, you have access to various structures that allow you to build new units. And this is no different with the Zerg, but the difference is that with the Terrans and the Protoss, the buildings themselves actually build the units. You know, so if you want to be able to build vehicles as the Terrans, you have to build a factory. If you want to be able to build infantry as the Terrans, you have to build a barracks, and if you want to be able to air units, you need to build starports. Now, there are buildings you build after that that you use to increase the other units that you can build from them, like you need an academy to build firebats and medics, or a science facility to build science vessels, but the Zerg are different in that they don't build any units at all from any of their secondary structures. Instead, building a new building allows the Zerg to create new units at their hatchery. The hatchery is the command center for the Zerg. What happens is, at a somewhat regular basis, the hatchery will create a new larva. It will create up to 3 larvae at a time, and these larvae are used to spawn new Zerg units. What this means is that you can actually select 3 larvae at a time and then order the construction of a unit, and you end up with 3 of that unit in the time it takes to build one, so long as you have the resources to pay for it, since all of the eggs begin hatching into that unit at the same time. This really helps the Zerg get off the ground to sort of get their swarm effect kicking in, because this allows them to queue up, you know, in the time that it takes for you. You would need 3 barracks to achieve this effect as the Terrans, you know, 3 structures. But the Zerg do it with their basic HQ structure. Now, they can't, you know, obviously queue up to 5 units doing this, so it requires a little bit more manual labor on your part. But if you see the benefits to it, it's really not that bad. Another really big thing that the Zerg do differently is they have the creep system, which restricts where they can build. The Protoss have a similar thing going on with the psionic energy provided by their pylons, but the Protoss are able to build pylons wherever they wish, so really all it's doing is adding an extra step to the Terran ability to construct anywhere. A Protoss player simply has to drop a pylon, and then they can build wherever they want. The Zerg can't do that. In order to build a structure, the Zerg must have creep to do so. The exception to this being, of course, the Zerg HQ building the hatchery. And the hatchery spews out a certain amount of creep over time, and it is this creep that you use to build that you need to build structures on. So this kind of places the Zerg on a defensive downshot, because it's harder for them to isolate their defenses around a choke point, because they would have to chain creep colonies or hatcheries to get over to that choke point. For that reason, it's a lot easier to defend a Zerg base if you rely on keeping your base fairly compact so that you can use fewer creep colony defenses to defend your entire structures. Now, keeping yourself boxed in like that comes with the downside that you're more vulnerable to nuking, which is a serious concern, but with all of the overlords at your disposal, that should help you out. Oh, that's another thing that's also different with the Zerg, is with the Terrans and the Protoss, the farm resource, you know, supply control, or psionics, comes from a unit instead of a structure, and this unit is the Zerg Overlord. and I'll get in more information into the Overlord when we talk about units, but one of the important things is the Overlord is your detector, and so since you'll be building a bunch of them anyway, you should have an easier time having a detector handy to fight in that ghost in the event that you are attempted to be nuked. So that's most of the differences. I mean, after that, the Zerg still collect minerals, they still collect gas, they still need to build structures to tech up. It takes them a little bit extra step in that they need to research and upgrade to their central HQ in order to be able to build the next tier of units, rather than just being able to do so right off of continuing to build the structures. But I think in the end, it ends up in the same sort of similar effect. Oh, another key difference with the Zerg as well, I almost forgot this. Zerg drones are lost when you try to build with them. The Terran SCV, you know, is able to build a building, and then when it's done, it can go back to work. When you build a structure with the drone is gone, because the drone doesn't build the building, it mutates into it. So, you know, that's something that Zerg players need to keep in mind, is if you take a drone off of minerals in order to build a building, then you're going to lose the drone. The other thing that you have to remember this means is basically every building that you build costs 50 more minerals than it says it does. So, while it's cool and all that the Zerg hatchery only costs 300 minerals, as opposed to the standard 400 cost of the Protoss Nexus and the Terran Command Center, the fact that you have to spend 50 minerals on the drone means that you're really only getting 50 minerals cheaper on the deal. This makes a big difference in the early game, but not as much later. At least on the good side, the Zerg, thanks to the linear construction, are able to build multiple drones at once, which means deploying structures can still be done fairly quickly, provided the economy and larva are cooperating. Okay, so I think I spent last podcast talking way too much about units and not enough about strategies, and the strategies were mixed into the units, which made it a little bit difficult to keep in mind of what all I was talking about. So, in order to avoid that, I'm going to start by making a very quick rundown of the units. I'm not going to really talk about them for very much, and then I'm going to get into strategies where we can talk more about them. So, going down from the top of the list, the Zerg. The first Zerg unit that you can build is the Zergling. Now, the Zergling is, without a doubt, on its own, the weakest unit in all of StarCraft. There's just no two ways about it. It's only got 35 hit points. It only does 5 damage. It is very weak. The good news about it, though, is it's kind of a raiding unit. It's small, it's quite quick, and it can be upgraded to become fairly nasty. But without a doubt, the single best thing about the Zergling is the fact that for the cost of a marine, for the cost of 50 minerals, you don't get one, you get two. And this makes it very, very easy for you to build a frighteningly large number of these things, which is good, because you need a frighteningly large number to get anything done with them. However, their small size and their high attack speed can be very useful. Moving on. The second combat unit the Zerg get is the Hydralisk. The Hydralisk is a favorite on the internet community, especially among rushers. This is because the Hydralisk is basically a bigger, badder, uglier Terran Marine. It has twice as much health, it does 4 points more damage, and can be upgraded to shoot as far as an upgraded Marine, can move faster than a Marine can, has the ability to burrow itself, and is still an anti-air unit. It's just pretty killer. Overall, all around, it's a great unit. Zerg players can feel comfortable relying on it throughout a battle. There really isn't a point in the game where the Zerg are just going to be like, I'm not going to build Hydralisks anymore, unless you're going, like, pure air. I mean, the Hydralisk is just an excellent go-to unit. You know, you need a stack of them to get the job done, but units of 12, 24, 32, they can just leave a mark on all kinds of enemies, even if they have pretty good defenses prepared. Now, before I move on from those two units, I want to talk quickly about the Overlord, since I said I would. The Overlord is the Zerg Supply Depot. It's also the Zerg Token Air Detector Unit. It's also the Zerg Transport. I know what you're thinking. Holy crap, what isn't this thing? Well, it's not a combat unit. It doesn't have any attacks. But aside from that, the Overlord is quite a deal for its package. Where everyone else has to build these units separately, a transport, a supply unit, and an airborne detector, the Overlord is all in one. And because you're going to be going through control fairly quickly, because your army is going to be large, you're going to build a lot of these things. Now, to start out, the Overlord is very slow, which makes it kind of feel like it's a building half the time. But the good news is, because it's airborne, it's protected against many type of rush forces from Zerg or Protoss players that are going to be focused more on melee attacks, not so much from the Terrans, since the Marines will be able to shoot them. However, you can upgrade the Overlord to have increased sight range, increased movement speed, and the ability to transport. These upgrades are fairly expensive and require you to have a level 2 hatchery, at least, to research them. But once upgraded, Overlords are some of the fastest transports in the game, and they double as detectors, which is just great. And so Zerg players will never find themselves short of a detector unit to have to escort their attack groups or transports to help them expand, which is great, because the faster Zerg players expand and kind of start winning the economic game, the better they will be in the long run. Okay, so after the hatchery level units, i.e. the first sort of tier units, once you have a spawning pool, which allows you to build Zerglings, you can research the lair, which is your level 2 command structure. And this allows you to build two new buildings, which allow you to produce Mutalisks, Scourges, Queens. Mutalisks are your air unit for the Zerg. It's the only air-to-air unit the Zerg get, at least pre-Brood War. The Mutalisk is an interesting unit in that it's the cheapest flyer air-to-air and air-to-ground unit of the three races, and is undoubtedly the weakest at air-to-air combat compared to the Scout and the Wraith. However, it is a little bit better than both of them at air-to-ground. The reason for this is because the Scout and the Wraith each have two different weapon systems. They have an air-to-air weapon system, which is like a missile system, which does like 20 or so damage or more. And they're quite potent attack groups, and against the 100 health Mutalisk, they can bring him down in just a few shots. Whereas the Mutalisk's attack has one attack, and it does almost as much damage as a Hydralisk to both air and ground units. The other really awesome thing that the Mutalisk attack does is it bounces up to three targets. So if a Mutalisk shoots at a siege tank, the glaive worm that it fires will probably bounce off the siege tank onto the bunker and then onto a nearby missile turret. So the Mutalisk basically is an outstanding raiding unit. It's very fast, and in large numbers they can do a lot of damage really, really quickly, but they're fragile. They're very fragile, and you don't want to stick around for too long because you'll just lose them. However, that, you know, if you can coordinate, if you micromanage your Mutalisk properly and kind of run in, kill a couple things, run out, you can actually severely harm an opponent early in the game and kind of like stifle his ability to develop overall. Another thing to keep in mind is that sometimes bases will be defended by key defensive things like siege tanks, or in the case of Protoss, the base defense might be powered by only one or two pylons. If you're willing to sacrifice 12 Mutalisks, you could go in there and focus fire on the siege tanks or the pylons and totally disrupt the enemy's defenses and then leave it wide open for using Hydralisks or Zerglings. But I'm getting into tactics, and I don't want to get into that just yet. Suffice it to say, the Mutalisk is an all-around great unit, although not more so for base raiding and general harassment as opposed for long-term air-to-air combat. So after the Mutalisk, you have the Scourge. Now, the Scourge is an interesting unit in that it's a suicide unit, which, as that implies, you know, it must destroy itself in order to attack, which kind of sucks. It's weak, it's very small, it's even more vulnerable than the Mutalisk, but this is for good reason, because Scourges inflict a huge amount of damage against air units. Basically, it's the Zerg counter to things like battlecruisers and things like that without them having their own, is that it will only take 4 to down a battlecruiser, and it will only take 2 to down any air unit smaller than that. And in addition to that, you get 2 per egg, so just like the Zerglings. So if you have the gas to pay for them, you can afford to just pump the suckers out, much like you can Zerglings. Now, mind you, because of their low hit points, they're fairly easy to kill, but still, if you sneak them in while you have Mutalisks distracting, you'll be surprised how effective they can be. Okay, after the Scourge, you have the Queen. Now, you may remember from the Terran podcast I mentioned that every race kind of has this token flying mage unit special ability thing, and the Queen is the Zerg equivalent of that. The Queen has three abilities: Parasite, Broodling, and Ensnare. It also has a fourth ability that's only usable against the Terrans, and I'll get to that in a minute. The quick rundown is Parasite is a really, really fun ability that you can implant on any unit in the game, friendly or otherwise, and when you do so, you gain the sight capabilities of that unit. Well, what's great about this is it basically gives you an excellent way to spy on your enemy. If you can manage to parasite an enemy transport unit, that thing will probably run around the entire enemy base at some point. You really get the whole place mapped out. Plus, you have advanced warning for when the transport makes its way towards your base with its things in tow. If you can manage to parasite an enemy detector unit, well, now you have free cloak detection, and you can see all the enemy cloaked units in a group. So, say you're going up against Terrans, and they have a science vessel, and you can assume that they're escorting something like ghosts or wraiths. Well, with the help of Parasite, if you parasite the science vessel, now you can see his cloaked units without needing to bring your own cloak detection. The Broodling is a unit that Zerg players can use to instantly kill a single biological or piloted unit in the enemy force that is going to be a big problem. A favorite target of Broodlings is siege tanks, but you can also use them with great effect against Dragoons, and if you need to, Zealots, as well as weaker Terran infantry, though I don't personally recommend it as it's kind of a waste of the ability. What it does is the Queen basically shoots out a larva at the unit in an alien style. The larva grows into the inside the guy and then bursts out his chest, supposedly killing him instantly. And we assume that, you know, the larvae are able to penetrate the armor of vehicles, and so they get inside the pilots and kill them, which is why vehicle units like siege tanks and Goliaths are still vulnerable. When this is done, the result are two very, very small units called Broodlings, which start chewing at everything. I say chewing because they don't do a whole lot of damage and they're kind of weak. But the key thing about that is if you're dealing with only a couple of siege tanks by themselves, and they're right next to each other, if you Broodling one siege tank, the Broodlings will come out in point blank with the other siege tank and will probably kill it, too, if the player controlling the siege tank doesn't unsiege him. Then you have Ensnare. Ensnare is not an ability I use much myself, but it can be useful. What it does is it spews this coat of green icky goo on an area and hits all units in the affected area with it. The goo doesn't do any damage, but it slows enemy units down. And this is great for helping you to prevent enemy units from escaping. But the other fun thing about it is that the goo sticks to anything it touches, even if there's cloaked units in the area. So if you know for a fact that the enemy has stealthed units hiding and you ensnare the area, then suddenly they'll be covered in goop and you can shoot them, or cut them, or bite them, whatever it is you're going to do. Okay, so after the Queen, we go on to the Tier 3 units, which are the ones that you need the Hive, or the third level of the hatchery, to build. We'll start with the Ultralisk. Now, the Ultralisk is a personal favorite of mine, which is funny, because it wasn't always a personal favorite of mine. Back when I started playing StarCraft, I wasn't a really big fan of the Ultralisk, because in a few games I had tried attacking with just them by themselves, expecting them to be like these souped-up Ultra units like battlecruisers or carriers, where like two or three of them will really, really do a number. And, you know, I sent them in completely by themselves against a fully armed Terran defense and was really kind of disappointed by the outcome. I thought, man, you know, 12 Hydralisks do a better job than you guys. Well, what I came, it took me until Brood War, when they got the huge new upgrades, for me to realize just how powerful they are. But you don't need Brood War to take advantage of them. Make no joke, Ultralisks are damage tanks. They have 400 hit points, which is huge, and they are themselves huge, which is both good and bad. But the bad is that that means siege tanks will do full damage to them. But the good is that, you know, they take up a lot of room, makes it really hard for the enemy to maneuver around them. They're also imposing to look at, which means that they will more likely soak up fire. When paired up with Hydralisks, Ultralisks are great, because even if they run in and then end up getting killed, they soaked up a ton of fire that the Hydralisks didn't, leaving them free to get their job done. They're basically just run-in and chew units. They don't have any anti-air capabilities. They're pure melee units, and they have a pretty good attack power, comparable to a battlecruiser, but nothing compared to siege tanks or Dark Templar or anything like that. Next, we have the Guardian. The Guardian is a very fond unit to me, dear to my heart, and it's interesting because it's one of the units that the Zerg can't really build Guardians straight up. Instead, they are evolved from Mutalisks. You first have to build the Mutalisk, and then for an additional 50 minerals and 100 gas, let me confirm that real quick, yes, 100 gas, the Mutalisk will turn into a Guardian. Guardians are probably the scariest unit for veteran enemies of the Zerg to behold. This is because the Guardian, pre-Brood War anyway, is the closest thing the Zerg have to a dedicated siege unit. It has a range equal to, if not greater than, a siege tank. Now, it's only air-to-ground, which means it needs to be escorted by Mutalisks or Scourges in order to be protected, and really, I do mean Mutalisks, because you're going to need prolonged protection. But the Guardian does excellent damage at obscene firing range, making it pretty much close to the only bomber unit in the game. So whereas carriers or battlecruisers must place themselves in harm's way to assault a base, Guardians are completely capable of sitting fairly outside, at least a little bit outside the range of your missile turrets, and pummel them with acid spores, tearing them apart slowly but surely, and then continuing to attack as the time goes by. A stack of Guardians can make quick work out of an enemy base, and due to their high attack power, do very good against ground-to-air defenders as well. Anything short of a Goliath, and even then, Guardians do pretty good against them. Marines and Hydralisks really don't stand a chance, and Dragoons don't fare too much better. Now, Guardians, you need to kind of keep an eye on them, though, because since they lack an air defense, Cloaked Wraiths, Scouts, Battlecruisers, Carriers, Scourges, Mutalisks are all very, very deadly to them. And if you allow them to get surrounded by a bunch of dedicated anti-air units, like a giant stack of Marines, then they're in deep trouble. However, a stack of Guardians will still kill something really dead quick, and they're excellent base shockers. If you're ever having to deal with an enemy base that just won't crack from your pressure, chances are Guardians will get the job done. Finally, we have the Defiler, which is the ground mage unit for the Zerg. The Defiler is a unit I don't play with a whole lot. You may be noticing from these podcasts that I have this tendency to not play with the ground-based mage units of the factions, and well, then that's generally true. It's not something I like to admit, but that level of micromanagement is not something I take great pride in. But again, that's not because the units are not powerful. The Defiler, unlike the Ghost, has no ability to fight on its own. It has no attack ability, it won't claw things, it won't bite things, and nothing like that. However, it does have a number of fairly scary abilities available to it. The first of these is Dark Swarm. Now, Dark Swarm is a difficult ability to explain, but what it does is it emits this swarm of, like, little insectoids in an area, and it emits so many of them that it clouds everything in the area. And so what this means is ranged attacks shooting into the swarm basically automatically miss. They still try to shoot, but they either do little damage or no damage at all because they're missing the unit because they can't see properly. Now, I believe units inside the Dark Swarm are still able to shoot unaffected. I will have to confirm that, but that's what I recall. The swarm lasts 60 seconds, and basically, if you take the Dark Swarm and you're able to place it in the area where you expect to have to run into a headlong base defense like siege tanks or whatnot, you place it in front of the siege tanks, well, now you're able to run your Zerg units at the tanks and bunkers knowing they won't take any damage until they're in melee. The second ability available to the Defiler is Plague. Plague is this really nasty, kind of almost nukish ability that the Defiler has. Basically what it does is it coats an area in this nasty red crap that will continue to drain it, causing 25 points of damage per second, and it will take the unit hit by it will take a total of 300 damage. Plague affects everything. Air units, ground units, and buildings. Nothing is safe from it. And doing its once its 300 damage has run its course, or when the unit hits one hit point, then they will sit there at one hit point and be ready to be destroyed. And what's great about this is if you think about it against the Terrans, if you can reduce a Terran structured to one hit point or just in the red due to plague, it will then burn down on its own, which, you know, basically makes plague a lot like a nuke against the Terrans. And then against the Protoss, not so much, because they'll still have their shields. And against the Zerg, they'll recover over time. But it's still a great ability for softening up an enemy base before you come running in with your large group of units. The third ability of the Defiler is Consume, and this doesn't mean anything bad directly for your enemy, but it does indirectly, because Consume allows the Defiler to eat a Zerg unit to gain his energy back. So a Defiler sitting peachy with a bunch of Zerglings near it can keep eating them to be able to keep using his abilities to, let's say, burrow, unburrow, eat a Zergling, plague, burrow. Unburrow, eat a Zergling, plague, unburrow. Unburrow the Zerglings, attack everything in the base, will take one hit to kill. You know, being able to pull that off is a little bit easier to say than do, but there are some of your options. And imagine, for a moment, how much fun it would be to plague a victory fleet on its way to attack you, and having to watch the Terran player turn his ass around and have to spend all those resources repairing his battlecruisers before he attacks you with them. I mean, he could attack you with them post-plague, but then they're going to be, like, really, really, really weak and able to go down easy to Mutalisks. Okay. So, almost forgot. The Brood War units. Again, I'm going to speak very quickly on them because I want to talk more about Brood War in the future. The two Brood War units for the Zerg are the Lurker and the Devourer. The Lurker is a mutation for the Hydralisk. Much like how the Mutalisk can mutate into a Guardian, once researched, the Hydralisk can mutate into a Lurker. A Lurker is a much larger unit than the Hydralisk, and is this burrowing monstrosity that can only attack while burrowed. It sacrifices the Hydralisk's anti-air capability as a result, but in return, it becomes a Zerg defensive powerhouse. Basically, two of these things can make mincemeat out of a Zealot fairly quickly. You pair these up with spore colonies and sunken colonies, and it suddenly becomes a lot easier to defend a Zerg base against ground attack. Lurkers are also outstanding on the attack. Once burrowed, they can inflict their great damage against ground, not just enemy ground units, but structures as well, and making quick work out of enemy builders. Want to deal a heavy blow to your enemy's economy? Burrow a pair of lurkers in the middle of their collector stream. You'll see his collectors die real fast. Lurkers, like I said, have no ability to attack unless burrowed, though, which means that they kind of have a siege tank effect if they have to move and then siege in order to get their damage done. And the lurker still is not really a siege tank replacement for the Zerg. Because it has to burrow, it has the same siege mode problem the siege tank does, and basically its range isn't quite as good. The good news is if you are going up against a Terran player who isn't smart enough to bring detectors with his siege tanks, though, and the lurkers can get close enough and then burrow, once they manage to burrow, the siege tank can't return fire anymore, which kind of gives them the one-up. So in some circumstances they're better, in some circumstances they're not. Then you have the Devourer, which is another upgrade for the Mutalisk, allowing the Mutalisk to mutate into either a Devourer or a Guardian. Now, one of the big problems the Zerg have in air-to-air combat is that the best air-to-air units they have is the Mutalisk and the Scourge. And while the Scourge is very good at killing things fairly quickly, you know, you lose them in the process. So it's not persistent air-to-air defense. And the Mutalisk's air-to-air defense is, you know, okay. A stack of them do well enough against Wraiths or Scouts. But their weight in Wraiths or Scouts are going to beat them up. And carriers and battlecruisers are kind of a really intimidating thing for Mutalisks to have to go up against. Pre-Brood War, this basically meant that in order to effectively defend a stack of Guardians, you may have needed more than 12, perhaps as many as 24 Mutalisks, which got unwieldy to manage, but you could do it. In Brood War, they introduced the Devourer, which is a new upgraded Mutalisk thing that shoots very slowly and spews these acid spore things at enemy targets. The Devourer works interestingly in that it does 25 damage per shot, which is comparable to a battlecruiser, but it fires a little bit more slowly, meaning that on its own you really can't rely on the Devourer to go toe-to-toe with, like, a battlecruiser and expect it to win. However, when combined with Mutalisks, the Devourer's corrosive acid sits in on the enemy unit for every time it hits it. And every time it hits it, it reduces the armor of the enemy unit per shot. What this means is one of the things that makes battlecruisers effective against Mutalisks is that they start with three or five armor, reducing the amount of damage that the Mutalisks would do from 9 to 4. And given that they have something like 350 hit points, that's a pretty significant drop. However, if you start hitting them with acid spores, each spore reduces the target's armor. So before long, the Mutalisks are doing full damage, not to mention the Devourers are doing full damage. And when you have a stack of them, that adds up fairly quickly. Suddenly, the Zerg do have a dedicated air-to-air unit that can actually, when combined appropriately with Mutalisks, will stand its own against a victory fleet. 12 Mutalisks and 12 Devourers do a pretty handy job of going up against 12 carriers or 12 battlecruisers. It'll be a bloody fight. You both will suffer casualties, but I am pretty sure the Zerg will win. Okay, so that's the units. Now let's run into strategy, and I'll try to get this done as fast as I can. In the early game, the Zerg function differently than everyone else because of their different construction method. The very beginning of it will still be similar. You'll want to set up X number of collectors for the number of minerals, you know, or just do what I do and stick to the standard 10. This is slowed down a little bit by the fact that you will need to build overlords, and the overlords are not built with your drones, thank God, so you don't lose a drone to a building, but you will find that you'll need at least one overlord before you're able to build 10 drones. The other thing that really slows the Zerg down early game is the fact that the Protoss Gateway and the Terran Barracks only cost 150 minerals to produce. The Zerg spawning pool costs 200 minerals to produce, and if you accommodate to the fact that you're going to lose a drone, it costs 250, which is really expensive for the Tier 1 barracks structure, but there's a very good reason for that, and that's because the Zerg, for the longest time, were able to affect a brutal early game for Zergling Rush that could just have Zerglings in the enemy base while they're still building their first barracks, if you did it right. what does doing it right look like? Well, basically, you build one drone. That's it. You build one drone. You collect minerals off that drone until you can build a spawning pool. You build a spawning pool. Then you keep collecting minerals. As soon as the spawning pool is done, you build four zerglings. Then you send the zerglings to the enemy base. If you do this right, well, if you did this right, back when spawning pools cost 150 minerals, you just destroyed your opponent because he didn't even have a single combat unit in the map, and this was especially true of enemy Protoss players. Blizzard has since fixed that by increasing the build time and the cost of the spawning pool significantly, so that while it's still possible to pull this off, it is significantly more difficult, especially against fast-fingered members of the opposing races. Once you get past that part of it, the other thing that you need to consider is that you can't build two spawning pools in order to increase your construction capacity to prepare for a rush like you can with the Terrans. Instead, you need a second hatchery. Now, the good news is I usually find with how much time I spend waiting for the damn spawning pool to finish and the overlords to build, it's actually not that hard to build up the 300 minerals you'll need to build said hatchery. Go ahead and place the hatchery anywhere that it's convenient, either close to your base so you have your first hatchery, so you can more easily select the larva, or closer to a choke point that you hope to defend. Now, I'm going to generally advise closer to your base, because as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, it's easier to defend a Zerg base when it's compacted, because then you don't have to build spore as many creep colonies to upgrade into spore colonies or sunken colonies to defend it. Instead, you can just kind of clump all of your colonies together and still defend a large number of structures. You know, you're going to need to space out a little bit, and on some maps, it's like perhaps Bloodbath, for example, where there's, like, the choke point is the most important thing about it. It's still worth it for you to move the hatchery a little bit further up, just so your creep can get up to the choke point, so you can start building colonies to properly defend it. But in maps with a less defined choke point, or a choke point that's further away from your base, it may or may not be worth it to do that. I played a game today, actually, where I had a difficult time with the Protoss because I kept wasting the time to build my hatchery closer to the choke point, which meant it took longer to build it, and it was more isolated from the rest of my base, and my defenses were a little bit more spread out, so it depends. It's circumstantial, but keep that in mind. Once you have the second hatchery down, and you should be building Zerglings while you're waiting for that to finish. I go ahead and upgrade the first hatchery to a lair and research burrowing in the second hatchery and get Hydralisks down. Your goal is to try to have, by the time the 12 Zealot Rush shows up, 12 Zerglings, at least 3 or 4 sunken colonies, and maybe a spore colony. Keep the Zerglings burrowed and out of sight so the enemy doesn't know they're coming, and when they come in to try and waste their ammo on the much more durable sunken colonies, unburrow and attack them from behind. This will hopefully split your enemy efforts, and they will probably slaughter your 12 Zerglings to pieces, but your Zerglings should distract them to give the sunken colonies enough time to destroy a lick ton of them. And if they don't, you know, as soon as the attack starts, start building more Zerglings. And you will find that if you have the larva to spare, you could have another 12 Zerglings in no time, and then things start looking really, really bad for your attacker. You'll note that this means that it's a little bit more difficult for you to set up some sort of automatic defense against a rush, and that's generally true with early game Zerg. It's just the way things work. Zerg units, it's harder to get enough Hydralisks out fast enough, but if you can manage to get 12 Hydralisks out, I will admit that will probably do a good enough job of defending you against an enemy attack. Okay, once you have your base defended against a rush, you're able to build Hydralisks, and you have a lair, and you have burrow researched, you should begin upgrading your overlords, and you should begin expanding. If you have to wait for the transporting upgrade on the overlord to get that expansion done, fine. But even then, you should be taking a couple of token Zerglings and starting to try to figure out where your enemy is. Where is he expanding? Put some eyes and ears out there, and if he starts expanding at an expansion that you think you can attack, take your forces there and try to deny him those resources. If not, then take your 12 Hydralisks and park them at the expansion you're trying to take and secure it with that. Okay, so Once you've gotten out of the early game, let's start talking about how do you destroy your enemy ultimately when playing as the Zerg. Well, one of the big problems you're going to come across is that the Zerg, by and large, unlike the Terrans, are their winningness usually involves taking a pack of units, pushing the A key, and clicking somewhere in the enemy base and watching them punch through it. Which is cool, because that means that there's less individual management on the attack group on your end, but this is also bad, because that's really the only way you have to go. You can't necessarily rely on something like a nuke to clear out the enemy base for you and not have to commit enemy units to the combat. And aside from Guardians, you don't have any units that can kind of sit there outside of harm's way and shell the opponent from a distance. And Guardians are, you know, fairly high-tech and difficult to get to. So, your strategy with the Zerg should really revolve around, you know, how do I punch through and get inside the enemy base and chew up the chewy insides of his base and avoid or get past the hardened defensive shell on the outside? Well, there's a few different ways to do this, and it depends on the attacker in question, but it all boils down to either brute force, undermining the defense, or backdoor. Brute force means you send so many units at them that it doesn't matter what their defenses are, you will trump them. And it is a fact that there's only so many Hydralisks a 2-bunker, 2-siege tank, 2-missile turret at defense is going to kill before the Hydralisks overrun them. That's all there is to it. And this may be 24 Hydralisks, this may be 32 Hydralisks, or 36 Hydralisks, it may be 48 Hydralisks. I don't know. If me saying you need to attack with 48 Hydralisks doesn't sound like a fun idea, then don't do it, move on to another strategy. But if that does sound like a good idea, I can assure you it works. It won't work for Zerglings, because Zerglings will move in too single file and will be too weak about it, but mixing in some Zerglings with those Hydralisks for good measure isn't a bad idea. Now, mixing in Ultralisks with those Hydralisks, on the other hand, will allow you to make a much smaller attack group much more effective. Ultralisks are such great damage soaks that you can take a pack of like 3 or 6 Ultralisks and compare them up with like 12 Hydralisks, and the two of them together, and an Overlord so you can do cloak detection, the two groups of them will do a pretty good job against even Terran defenses in many cases. So that's brute forcing your way in, I should say. Okay, so subverting the enemy defense is kind of what you have to do after you get to the point where your Protoss or your Terran players have figured out ways to really hunker down and make it more difficult for you to brute force your way in, be it either with large amounts of photon cannons, or because they have reavers, or because they have siege tanks, whatever the case may be. So you have a few tools at your disposal. The first is the Queen, and the Queen's Broodling. And the Broodling, if you have say your enemy has 3 siege tanks defending his base, and it's the siege tanks you're worried about, you're pretty sure you can overcome the bunkers with your 12 or 24 Hydralisks. No problem. Build 3 Queens. Research Broodling. Wait until the time is right, run in, Broodling the 3 siege tanks, send your Hydralisks in. Enemy defenses are weakened, you're fine. Let's say your problem is more Protoss in nature, and it's just that he has a crap ton of photon cannons, but foolishly, these photon cannons are powered by only a pair of pylons. Well, see if it isn't possible for you to build a squad of Mutalisks, take them, fly around the cannons, and go in for a quick surgical strike, focusing specifically on the pylons. If they can do this, and it may be difficult, then you have a good show on your hands. If not, then you might have to rely more on the Devourer and its plague ability. If you plague that entire mess, then it will still have its shields, but it will be out of its hit points, and generally speaking, shields are a little bit easier to punch through than hit points are, which will make your job easier. Last but not least, there's, of course, Guardians, which can shoot enemy defenses from outside their range, so if your problem is siege tanks, bunkers, whatever, and you want to take just enough Guardians to go in and kill their front door, and then rush in with a frighteningly large number of Zerglings now that they're unable to defend themselves and just laugh maniacally, you can do that too. Okay. And then there's, you know, getting around your enemy base, which is a little bit more difficult to do, but keep in mind that you do have the ability to transport units, so you can sneak them around the enemy if they have a weak corner, and you can rely on guardians to make a hole for you to be able to land units into an enemy base against a weak corner. Okay, so some thoughts specifically about fighting against the Zerg as the Zerg. The most important thing to remember when fighting against Zerg as Zerg is, well, first of all, the same thing that's important to remember when doing any mirror match is that whatever racial unique traits or benefits that you get benefit from, your enemy's going to have the same thing going for them. So you can't sit here and expect, well, I'm going to build so many units that the enemy's not going to be able to target them all. I have news for you. Your enemy's going to build just as many units as you are if you're fighting against Zerg. So defeating your opponent as Zerg is really going to bolt down to a big contest of who expands better, who defends their base better, who makes better attack groups. And my advice to you in this regard is to remember that balanced attack groups are generally better than homogeneous ones, and that if your enemy is sitting here and building nothing but Hydralisks, and you're able to come at him with a combination of Hydralisks, Guardians, and Zerglings, you're going to win in the end, so long as you have, you know, the right numbers. It's probably more important that you try and keep an eye on your enemy, figure out where he's going, and hit him off at the pass economically. The most fun thing to remember about Zerg versus Zerg, though, is that unlike Protoss pylons, which only emit psi energy for the side that builds them, creep is indiscriminate. So if you can manage to sneak probes onto your enemy creep, or drones into the enemy creep, you can start building buildings to your advantage, like sunken colonies, or spore colonies, or my favorite, the exit to Anidius Canal. Anidius Canal is a very advanced Zerg building that can be built that basically burrows a tunnel between point A and point B, allowing Zerg units to instantly transport from point A to point B. So, what do? Build a stack of Ultralisks and Hydralisks. Build an Anidius Canal entrance. Sneak all your guys right next to the canal. Then, you take a spying unit, like an overlord or a queen, and find some corner of the enemy base where they're not properly defended. Deploy the exit of your Anidius Canal, and as soon as the exit is complete, send your units through, and you just backdoor them. Excellent strategy every time. It doesn't work against the other two races, unfortunately, but it's really fun to do against enemy Zerg players. Now, when fighting against the Terrans, as mentioned previous podcasts, the Terrans are special abilities people, and a number of those abilities are pretty much bunkered down specifically for fighting the Zerg, which is something you have to be wary of. But there is one thing the Terrans do, and they do you a favor in this, in that your queen has a fourth ability that I hinted at before, which is the ability to infest a Terran command center. In order to do this, you have to be attacking the command center and get the command center down to about, I think it's low yellow or red health. At this point, if you have a queen standing next to it, the queen will zoom into the command center and work her magic. When she's done, she will have infested the human populace inside of the command center, and the command center will now produce for you infested Terrans. Infested Terrans are kind of like ground scourges. They are suicide units that move very fast and do an insane amount of damage when they blow up. So the Zerg, once you have an infested command center, you can start using them to either airdrop into an enemy base or to run them headfirst at an enemy defense, and if they can manage to make it, they can take out us, and they do enough damage to take out a supply, at least a bunker, in a single blow. So they're pretty badass. Not to mention they have a really, really cool voice. Aside from the infestation, though, the big thing to remember when fighting against the Terrans is that they have some units that excel against fighting swarms and some units that don't, and to see if you can't pair your units appropriately. Another thing to remember is in Brood War, the medic has the ability to heal Parasite and Plague and Ensnare. So these abilities have reduced effectiveness against Terrans in Brood War. Outside of Brood War, though, you don't have nothing to worry about. They're not going to be able to heal it, so you're going to be fine. But yeah, your big enemies are going to be Firebats, who are going to do a number to you, and Siege Tanks, who are going to make Terran bases very, very difficult to crack. And a good answer to the Siege Tanks is Broodlings, air units, like Guardians, hit-and-fade Mutalisk attacks, and a good counter to the Firebats is Hydralisks, who, if you have enough of them, will kill Firebats before they get close. again and again, air units, as air units are always a counter to fire bats. Versus Protoss. Now, I find one of the fun and interesting things about playing Zerg is some days Protoss feel like an incredibly easy opponent, and other days they feel like they're just utter and total hell to fight. And a lot of that has to do with how well the Protoss player focuses on his anti-Zerg capabilities. The first of these capabilities is Zealots. Zealots are brutal against Terrans, and in some ways they're even worse against Zerg. A Zealot will chew through more than his weight in Zerglings once it hits a certain proportion. And they can 12 Zealots can do a number to sunken colonies as well. They're just very, very well armed and defended, and that makes it very difficult for the swarmy but low damage Zerg to do much about it. That's not to say that there aren't things that can do things about it. Lurkers work at their magic quite well, and Hydralisks can stand their own against an equal number of Zealots, not too terribly. They'll still lose in the end, but if you have more Hydralisks than the enemy does Zealots, you're in pretty good shape. Brutaling will do well against individual Zealots, but obviously your enemy is probably not going to have individuals running around. Now, the good news, though, is Zealots don't have any anti-air defense, and the air-to-air defense they'll probably rely on to defend themselves with is Dragoons. And Dragoons, although something that Mutalisks should be careful of, is not something that Zerglings generally have to worry about, interestingly enough, because of their slow fire rate. Dragoons are also vulnerable to Broodlings, so if you want to escort with such, with a queen, then you can deal with that. Ultralisks also are more powerful than Zealots, although you should be careful, because 4 Zealots is usually all it takes to start bringing down an Ultralisk, which, if you think about it, both come to the, well, the Zealots cost more than the 1 Ultralisk do in that case, so that kind of makes sense. Really, to beat Protoss, the Zerg player has to take advantage of the fact that in the time it takes for the Protoss to build 1 unit, the Zerg could have 3, maybe even 6. Or more, and if you just work on that advantage, you can just do all kinds of crazy damage. The things to keep your eyes open for most deadly, though, are Psionic Storm and Reavers. Now, this is the case in general when fighting against Protoss, but since the Zerg are more reliant on swarmy tactics, this is even more so the case. Reavers do so much damage per shot that they will instantly kill anything less than an Ultralisk, and Ultralisks won't last very long. And Psionic Storm does enough damage that every kind of Zerg unit should be afraid of it. And the fact that, especially the AI, is quite capable of grabbing a High Templar, Psionic Storming a pack of Zerg, and then running away into defenses for you to get yourself killed on them makes it a very, very dangerous thing to counter. So one of the things you have to do to counter Psionic Storm is try to, you know, just pay attention. If your units get Psionic Stormed, you can move out of the storm and you'll stop taking damage. Another thing to do is to see if you can't parasite a High Templar or maybe a shuttle, so you can see where the High Templar are stored. And then if they only have a handful of High Templar, feel free to use a Broodling maybe even as well. Generally, I just rely on thinking, oh crap, he has High Templar. If I see them, kill it. If not, just try not to clump together or stay in one place long enough for your enemy to be able to hit you with Psionic Storm with it. As for the Reavers, yeah, you pretty much need air units to deal with them. I mean, they're robotic, which means they're not vulnerable to Broodlings. You can't Broodling them to death. You're really not going to beat them by rushing them headlong. You got to use air units. That's all there is to it. And the good news is they have no air attack, and they're very slow, so they can't escape. So this will pretty much work every time. But without Reavers or proper use of Psionic Storm, Ultralisks make good work out of the Protoss. They chew through photon cannons pretty well, and they still take enough damage to provide adequate meat shielding for your Hydralisks or large packs of Zerglings. One thing I want to mention about Zerglings before I take off is that when fully upgraded, as in both the movement and the attack speed upgrade, 12 Zerglings do a lot of damage really, really fast. So just because you hit the end of the tech tree, don't discount the little buggers. You'd be surprised at how much better they get. They're still weak as all hell as far as getting killed easily, but they do a fair amount of damage. Okay, so let's give this a wrap up with some final thoughts. First of all, I had wanted to mention this last podcast, but I failed to do so. In the very, very first episode, I made a grievous error where I said that the starting minerals in a typical map is a 2,500. And that was a lie. It was a mistake. My memory was wrong. I apologize for that. It's actually 1,500 instead of 2,500. So this throws off the numbers I told you guys a little bit. It means that the collection rate numbers are the same, but the burnout rate numbers are not. So allow me to pull out my numbers sheet. If you're a reader of mockvirgil.com, you've probably already seen this, but just in case you don't check frequently, basically what this means is the starting minerals on a typical local starting point is not what I said. It is actually 12,000 minerals, and I think I said it was something like 25,000, and that's wrong. At 10 seconds per trip, per collector, you're still returning 48 minerals per minute. After about a minute, you are still generating 384 minerals a minute at one collector per mineral crystal, and 768 minerals per two collectors per node. So that all is still true. However, the burnout times are a lot smaller. 8 collectors would burn you out in 31 minutes, and 16 collectors would burn you out in 15, which sounds more accurate than what I said in that podcast, so please take note of that. Aside from that, nope, I got nothing else. That was pretty much what I had to say. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast, and I hope you stick around for our next episode where we will be talking about the Protoss, my life for ire. See you then.